Welcome to Inclusion for All Radio, a podcast and story sharing series that seeks to represent the voice of the poor and vulnerable groups in Nigeria. Our aim is to highlight the barriers that keep the poor excluded and advocate for their removal. Inclusion for All Radio, amplifying voices unheard. Welcome to episode 6 of the Inclusion for All Radio podcast series. My name is Chinasa Collins Ogwu, and I head Inclusion for All, which is a multifaceted advocacy platform that seeks to deepen the knowledge and understanding of the impact of exclusion on marginalized communities while using evidence-based data to advocate for their removal. So this episode will mark the first of a series of conversations around the Naira redesign and what it means for financial inclusion. The topic for this episode is Nigeria Naira redesign, and the question is, does it enable financial inclusion or does it extenuate financial exclusion? The goal of the conversation is to unpack and dimension how the Naira redesign and attendant decisions will impact Nigeria's financial inclusion landscape through the lens of a thought leader within the Nigeria financial inclusion ecosystem. Just to give some context, on the 25th of October, the Central Bank of Nigeria, CBN, announced plans to redesign the 200 Naira, 500 Naira and 1,000 Naira notes. And this is supposed to take effect on December 15, which is just a couple of days from today. And basically, the circulation of this newly designed notes will begin from 15th, but in existence with the old notes, which will remain in circulation until the 31st of January. So basically, people can continue to use the old notes until the 31st of January 2023, after which it no longer is legal tender. So bank customers have been advised to pay their old notes into their account to enable them access the new currency once it's available. The aim is reportedly to accelerate the drive to transition Nigeria into a cashless economy through increased e-Naira adoption and to curb the circulation of cash outside the banking system. While this is a step in the right direction towards digital financial inclusion, the marginalized communities are most likely to be impacted negatively due to lack of awareness and understanding, existential barriers to formal financial inclusion, such as lack of requisite identification, and so on. However, the government has also promised to take measures that will ensure that rural communities and marginalized populations are included in the process. To unpack what the Naira redesign really means for financial inclusion, I'll be joined by a thought leader and key contributor to policy and market issues about digital transformation, fintech, and financial inclusion. Professor Olayinka David West is the Associate Dean of the Lagos Business School LBS in Nigeria, where she leads the Sustainable and Inclusive Digital Financial Services, SIDFS, initiative, a research, advocacy, and capacity-building initiative dedicated to enhancing financial inclusion in Nigeria. Welcome, Prof. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on, and I'm looking forward to you sharing your perspective on this topic.
Hi, Chinasa, and it's great to be here and engaging with the public on this very important directive that could either make or mar some of the progress we've made in a couple of years.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think that's a good place to start when you talk about the progress. And I know that you've been in this ecosystem for years, right? And you've seen the progress that we've recorded from, I remember as early as when, you know, in my banking career, we used to talk about financial inclusion and nobody understood what we're talking about. So like, why are you trying to bank the unbanked? There's no money there. You know, KYC was non-existent for these populations. And so a few weeks ago, right, when the CBN did the International Financial Inclusion Conference to commemorate, you know, how far Nigeria has come, and basically recording that process, and in light of this new directive, my question to you is, what does this mean? You know, this transition into a cashless economy, what does it mean for financial inclusion of the poor, and is the timing right?
Okay, thanks, Chinasa. And I think that there are many questions packed into that. So what I'll just try and do is, again, let's even contextualize where we're coming from, right? Mm-hmm. Financial inclusion. And I think sometimes we use an account as the basic means of measurement of financial inclusion, but is that what it really means? Mm-hmm. So for the benefits of the audience and setting the context, let's sort of put some ground rules here. So when we say financial inclusion, we're talking about access to the use of affordable financial services that meet the needs of the consumer, right? And there are many things packed in there. So when we talk about access to, that means I must be able to access and reach financial services within my locality, mm-hmm. right? So in terms of how does it get to the last mile? In terms of usage, right? Usage means I must be able to use it whenever I need to make a payment or do something regarding money.
Yeah.
And what does that also mean? That means that I must, because of technology and mobile telephony, we've mm-hmm. seen the upsurge in digital financial services. And we know that, oh, it's cheaper to use digital means to access financial services mm-hmm. than trying to use physical brick and mortar means to access financial services. Mm-hmm. So do we have access to the right technologies and the infrastructure that supports these technologies? Is it distributed locally within each locality? Mm-hmm. The third is affordable financial services. Right. Now, affordable is relative, right? Mm-hmm. Because it depends on who you are, where you live, what you do, mm-hmm. etc. But nonetheless, do we have financial services that cater to all Nigerians, mm-hmm. irrespective of socioeconomic status, etc.? So that when we talk about that, we talk about terms around what does it cost us to serve and what does it cost people to use? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you find out that it's not just the monetary costs. There are also pecuniary costs like transportation, mm-hmm. right? Social costs, time, et cetera, right? So we need to pick that in. The final thing is, does it meet their needs? Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very important concept because, Chinasa, you and me, we didn't open an account because we needed an account.
Sure.
We opened an account because probably we started working mm-hmm. and our bosses said, you know what, guys, before you can earn the salary that you're due, yeah. you must open an account.
Absolutely.
And we had our eye on that pot of gold, mm-hmm. the salary we were going to earn.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody who is not economically active, mm-hmm. who is probably self-employed, what is the pot of gold for him? And do we have the right set of products that meets that person's behaviors, lifestyles, etc., etc.?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way we need to look at financial inclusion. And it's not just banking.
Mm-hmm.
It's banking, it's insurance, it's yeah. pensions, it's investments, right? So there's a whole plethora of financial services, but then banking is like the entry point to which we can say, okay, how do we build people up?
Yeah.
So when you go back to the question and in terms of financial inclusion, are we there yet? No, we're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not there on a variety of issues and reasons. So we find out that we've been trying to address this for more than 10 years mm-hmm. now. But then again, there are a plethora of reasons, and those reasons, they're not homogeneous, right?
Yeah.
The reasons vary depending on locality, geography, mm-hmm. you know, education, literacy, mm-hmm. and there are many, many dimensions to it. So it's almost like a multi-headed hydra
mm-hmm.
that we're trying to slash, right?
Yeah.
And it goes back to on the regulator, the institution side, as well as the provider side, mm-hmm. how well do we truly, truly know Nigeria?
Mm.
Right? Because this is really about behaviors of people.
Yeah.
My behavior is different from the behavior of my counterparts in Sokoto State.
Absolutely.
So why should we model only me, not model my counterparts in Sokoto State?
Mm-hmm.
So right now, this redesign regime is, you know, you can look at it in three ways, right? And again, let's remember something. Nigeria has 8 different banknotes, denominations of banknotes in
mm-hmm.
circulation.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not forget that, right?
Yes.
What the central bank is doing is that they're redesigning the top tier,
mm-hmm.
which is the 200, the 500, and the 1,000.
Yes.
We still have 5 below that top tier.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yes.
So that's the first thing we need to put into
mm-hmm.
context. Now,
mm-hmm.
how do we ensure that people in rural locations understand and know this?
Okay.
First of all, I think that awareness building is critical.
Right.
Even in the urban locations,
mm-hmm.
how many of us really engage with institutional announcements,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes we hear them, but we don't process them. So
absolutely.
You realize that, exactly. So you find out that a lot of people, even in urban areas, people live outside of Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people travel
yeah.
and take 100,000 with them that, okay, so when I come back,
mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about rushing to the bank, et cetera,
exactly.
et cetera. So
yes.
there are many Nigerians in the ecosystem
mm-hmm.
that we really need to cater to.
Absolutely.
So when you put all those things into perspective, one thing that I can say that it is intended to, and you know, there's intended consequences and unintended consequences that are trade-offs. Okay.
Absolutely.
One thing that is intended is, okay, how do we formalize the informal sector?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really the way I sort of put this, because it's really one of the pillars to formalizing the informal sector.
Correct.
But then again, my question is, do we have all the drivers or all the pieces or components ready to be able to pull this trigger? Or are we pulling the trigger ahead of time and we're now trying to put all the pieces?
Yes.
Exactly. So those are the different dynamics that we need to contend with. Because when you think about the underserved communities, Chinasa, you know, just trying to even classify them, what are the dynamics or characteristics?
Mm-hmm.
They're typically rural,
right?
They also have limited infrastructure access.
Mm-hmm.
That means in terms of roads, power,
absolutely,
telecoms infrastructure, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have limited economic activity. So they're probably agrarian societies and very limited economic activity.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to also realize that the way they behave,
mm-hmm,
the way they process things, the way they think is totally different from the urban, the peri-urban, and the one that's economically active in that sense. So for me, those are the foundations that we sort of all have to crack and think through.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for such a comprehensive explanation of the definition of financial inclusion and, you know, the different facets of it. Because you're right, when people think financial inclusion, it's usually, you know, do you have a bank account? But there's so many other parts of that that makes up financial inclusion. To your point about intended consequences and unintended consequences, I think that's sort of the focus of this conversation. We definitely see the well-meaning intentions of the central bank, what they're trying to do. Our concern, though, is, you know, for people in these rural communities, and you have talked about the need for awareness, and we don't even know that. That doesn't even exist in the urban areas. And I'll give an example. So a couple of weeks ago, I was in Abuja, heard someone talking about the Naira, and this is somebody who lives in an urban area, probably even works very close to the CBN, if not the CBN. And he was advising this waitress in the restaurant that the 1,000 Naira notes and all the notes were going to stop being in circulation. And by, I can't remember what date it was, but I was just a bit concerned because I'm like, okay, this is somebody in an urban location that doesn't have the right information. So how much more people in these hard to reach communities? So the question is, this timing, is it enough? Because the deadlines are so tight. What are we going to expect to see by January? Is this going to widen the exclusion gap, as it were? And that's what it's looking like. And then, you know, over time, is the expectation for things to adjust somehow? And another question into this is, if the CBN is saying they're going to put measures in place, are those measures sufficient in the time frame that we have?
Okay, so it's all timing related. So
yes.
Let's start with the timing of the switch, right, of the
mm-hmm.
swap.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, you see, it's a chicken and egg, and also going back to history and antecedents,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
We Nigerians ourselves, we don't sort of toe a normal line. And I'll use example of sometimes we have to use some very shock treatment to get us to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why I said it's all behavioral,
right?
And if you go back to the issue around ATM adoption, right?
Yes.
I remember there was a time when we didn't want to use ATMs. People were still crowding into the banking halls. And onto the CBN, impose the fee
people
of over-the-counter transactions, then people went to the ATMs.
Right.
Okay, so I think that we need to better understand Nigerian behaviors and use more of the behavioral science to sort of say what's the right way to communicate and nudge Nigerians to behave in the way we want them to behave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Timing is one dimension that, honestly speaking, even if you gave us a year, we would still complain that it's never enough.
Yes.
Right? So the timing is also backed up with the process and the efficiency at which we want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we say, for example, the numbers of we have X trillion in circulation.
Yes.
The question I ask is, of the X trillion we have in circulation, what is the denomination? What proportion are 1,500 and 200? Because that's really the proportion that we're really trying to get at. And
absolutely,
who is holding and where are they, etc.
Yeah.
But we know that, again, from work that has been done in the social and investment funds and things like that, it's the richer people that keep the higher denominations.
Yes.
The poorer people seldom use the higher denominations.
Absolutely.
So, but again, I don't have sufficient
data,
evidence to say I have X trillion in 5 Nairas, X billion in 10 Nairas, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have that data. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it would be nice to even see that data because that helps you even, you know, frame and understand and filter the size of the problem we're trying to address. Right. So when you look at timing, I think the timing for the entire exercise up from the date of announcement up to January 31 mm-hmm. is like 100 days, right?
Yes.
And in that 100 days, we're supposed to be paying in monies into bank deposits, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. for the banks, that's good.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Liability generation.
Of course.
The banks are always looking to generate liabilities mm-hmm. because that's supposed to help them improve their access, cost of funds, lend more, etc. But
yes.
we learned in India that that really didn't happen in that case. So mm-hmm. it's really going back to, do we have the relevant access points? If, for example, Chinasa, if we want to say that, and I'll use a couple of years ago, we're doing the voting, registering, you know, digitizing the voters register.
Yeah.
We also had this kind of rush time frame, right? So it mm-hmm. was a matter of you must go to a registration agent and we want to do 60 million voters mm-hmm. and capture them mm-hmm. within a 2-week period.
Yeah.
The first question I ask is, how many access points, again, do we have sufficient access points? Because mm-hmm. this is basically operations management, queuing theory, etc., etc.,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Do we have enough access points?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, when you get in front of whoever is processing, right?
Yes.
Do they have the right wherewithal and competencies to be able to capture the information?
Yes.
So that's another issue, the human component. Have people been trained?
Mm-hmm.
Account opening. We need to be able to open accounts in 5 minutes,
yes.
right? Can we do that in 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. Have we simulated it? Have we tested it? If we can do that, how many, if we have 100 points, how many accounts can we open a day
yes.
using 10 resources, etc.? So
yeah.
I still believe in the science of the maths.
Mm-hmm.
And if we
mm-hmm.
do the maths and simulate the maths, so we know that, oh, it's possible, it's not possible, etc., right?
Yeah.
Then the third thing is it going to widen or aid inclusion?
Yeah.
Again, it depends on all those factors. Because honestly speaking, if I have 1,000 Naira,
yeah.
there's also an unintended consequence that there's going to be a flight to safety.
Mm-hmm.
So I might start changing that 1,000 Naira mm-hmm. into 100 Naira.
You
knowing
know?
That at least...
Wow.
I don't... No, seriously, for me, that's a flight to safety.
It is.
So I can say, let me invest in lower denominations
Nations,
that are not
absolutely.
Going to be affected by this.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Another unintended consequence is it's going to create new opportunities for arbitrage and proxy banking.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the bottom line is, if I don't want to go to the bank or I don't have time to go to the bank, I can go to an agent and then create an opportunity. The agent can say, I'm going to charge you 100 Naira for every 1,000 you bring
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his own way of laundering.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
again, I'm still invisible to the system because I'm using a proxy to help me in those financial services mm-hmm. and that exchange process in mm-hmm. general. Right?
Yes.
So that's the other thing. But I think when you go back to what's the real intention is really to drive accounts, creation of accounts, or legal or formal stores of value,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Stores of value. But like you rightly mentioned in the introduction, there are two sides of this coin.
Yeah.
It's targeting people who are banked because there's an assumption that you already have a bank account.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
So that's the low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't have a bank account,
yes.
what is the pathway to getting a bank account? And then, so it's a two-step process.
Mm-hmm.
Getting your bank account first,
mm-hmm.
Regularizing your bank account. And don't forget that a bank account also needs a lot of procedural documentation
yes.
around it,
yes.
right? And it's not something that you just wake up, snap your fingers, 5 minutes,
nope.
you're done,
no.
okay? So getting your bank account and then being able to do the deposits. Do the banks have the sufficient capacity and capability to open 1 million accounts a day, for example?
No.
Uh-huh. So that, you know, even if you spread it across the 22 banks or
mm-hmm,
some or
mm-hmm.
the other, do we have that capability? So I think that from a supply side, we need to go back to the drawing board and ask, is this a push or a pull initiative?
Yeah.
And then even if I want to, you know, again, I'm going to compare it to the NIN registration
yeah.
again,
mm-hmm.
which was also a push directive, right?
Yes.
And it was like, okay, you need to link your name to a SIM.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a name, your SIM will be disabled.
Yeah.
So we need to go back to what this issue around, and it's one of the definitional points of financial inclusion. What is the need, right? What does it meet my need? What is the proposition?
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of us, the phone has a higher value, perception value amongst Nigerians than a bank account.
Yes.
And that's the reality of it. So people felt that I value my phone. Mm-hmm. I want to keep my phone. So how do we make a bank account attractive, or how do we make it meet the user propositions with money, right?
Mm, that's the big question.
Technically, Chinasa, nobody goes for a bank account. Like I said, what's the pot
except
of gold
promising them money in
everybody?
That bank account?
Well, again, so what's the proposition? And we need to think around these things because everything boils down to the individual behaviors.
Yeah.
So for me as an employee, my pot of gold was I need a bank account because that is where I earn my salary. Yeah. The salary is the pot of gold.
Yeah.
For somebody who doesn't do that, how are we going to make a bank account relevant to his own
need.
Lifestyle, the way he is there and then?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when you think about it, it's not a bank account you're selling. You're selling a proposition around money.
Access
does somebody
finance.
Want to, for example, hold money? Because I want to keep my money. I want to hold it somewhere so I don't have access to spending it indiscriminately, right?
Yes.
So I need to make a payment or a remittance or something or the other, right? That's a move money.
Yeah.
I need to grow my money, right? I have some extra money that I can put aside and let it just grow it for me. So that's where you have savings and investment.
Yeah.
And then finally, I need money to grow my business.
Mm-hmm.
I need money to make a purchase. So I want to be able to access credit. So those are really how people think around money.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think around a bank account. They think around what do I need to
What's
do
the value
with money
in it for me? Yeah.
Exactly. So how do we communicate these money propositions and understand these money propositions appropriately?
Mm-hmm.
Because the money proposition for Chinasa is different to the money proposition for somebody who is living in Nasarawa State, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So it goes back to deep understanding of the various customer segments and their psychometric behaviors so we right now we only look at demographic, right? How do we better understand their psychometric, their desires, so we can build products that really meet their needs?
Absolutely.
And then adoption again should not be as difficult in that sense.
Wow, that was a packed answer. And I think for me what it sounds like is, and you were right about the denominations that have been changed and whether they're actually even available to these people that we're concerned about. So I had thought about it like, okay, you know, these people in rural communities probably don't even have access to 500 naira on a daily basis. It's probably a smaller denomination.
Yeah.
So maybe this is not really a problem for them. However, they still need, from the looks of things, they will still at some point need to transact and use a bank account. And to do that, it means that you need to be banked. We know that's not what financial inclusion is all about, but from the directives of the CBN, you need to have a bank account. And again, with the work that we're doing at Inclusion for All, we know that one of the challenges with having bank accounts is lack of identification. So it goes back to the NIN conversation as well. These people don't even have access to the basic requirement to open a bank account. Then in terms of access points and CBN leveraging, I think one of their solutions is to leverage the agent network. Are there enough agents to address these issues? Are the agents going to be able to open bank accounts for these people? Do they have the capabilities to do so? And in what time frame? Because again, opening a bank account, as we know, isn't as straightforward as, you know, you've mentioned. So it's interesting. And again, should we really be concerned about these people not having bank accounts or not? Or should we just sort of start to look for how to reduce the impacts of the effects of this directive on them, which is basically now going back to the drawing board, understanding their behaviors and designing solutions that, you know, address their needs, but knowing that for a while they'll be excluded, you know, because we can't solve those problems in less than 30 days. Because January is here already.
Yes, I know. But you see, Chinasa, I don't like to back down on things. Because you see, this isn't a journey that we started in November.
Mm-hmm.
We started this journey more than 10 years ago. So the challenge is we still have constraints. There's still limiting factors that are inhibiting us from addressing and banking a lot of the unbanked, especially in those rural and underserved communities. Now, for me, this is actually a deeper call to action. and another catalyst to say, you know what, we can't just rest on our oars and expect to be doing the same things and expecting different results.
Absolutely.
So for me, it's a call to action that, you know what do we need to do differently? Because why should somebody who lives in a marginalized community be treated differently than you who lives in Abuja or Lagos? We're all Nigerians.
Yeah.
So how do we ensure that we can bring this dignity and this need to every single Nigerian? And so from whether, you know, so this is, again, for me, another stoke.
Yeah.
Because it tells us that we're not there yet.
Absolutely.
And even though we can celebrate our successes, we still have to close big gaps. So I want us to use this opportunity. We might not solve it in the time frame, but to collectively come back again to the drawing board and say, you know what, we're moving the goalpost from the regulatory side, right?
Yeah.
But how do we ensure that no man is left behind? And that's where we all need to come back as an ecosystem and say this is a collective problem. So you talked about the agent networks and the time frame. Some of the work we've done at SIDFS was looking at agent economics, right? Mm-hmm. And when you look at an agent, and this is an argument I was having with a banker yesterday.
Yeah.
When you walk into a bank, the bank is supposed to do the onboarding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is explain the benefits of the product, the service, and get the customer engaged, understood, fill the form, etc. So if you want an agent to invest 1 hour to do this work, then don't forget agents are only rewarded on transaction.
Absolutely.
Who pays for that resting time that the agent is using to build the transaction base, but it might not yield into a transaction. So as a bank employee, that's part of your job, it's part of your salary and your entitlement, etc. So it's costed in. That's one thing we need to think about. The second is, again, there are different types of agents and the level of trust and KYC and due diligence you need to do for agents also varies, right? Because again, do I have an agent that I can trust to give third party all my personal information, ID, birth date, et cetera, in terms of identity and privacy? Because don't forget, we also have the National Data Protection Regulation to think about. Because once the banks enable agents to collect information, do I trust that the agent would also not disclose my information or keep the privacy and the chain of custody and the privacy of my information secure? Because this is really my name, my birth date, all personally identifiable information around me. So if we're going to use the agent, how do we also upschool the agent around national data protection and maintaining and managing confidentiality of this information, understanding consent, disclosure, etc., etc.? And then also, from as far as the agent is concerned, agents are also independent entrepreneurs. So they're mindful of the economics and their own livelihoods, right? So if an agent is going to spend time doing customer service work, how does he get compensated for that work? And don't forget another thing Chinasa says, that in a lot of these situations, it's a very high touch engagement, right? Because sometimes you have a form, a bank form that's written in English, and you're going to have to explain every single field to somebody. So if we think about, you know, when you're filling a survey, for example, we'll tell you, oh, this survey should take at least 15 minutes to complete. That is when you're self-administering. If it has to be enumerated, administered, and then you're converting to different languages, right? So you read it in English. Ah, madam, kiloruko yi, you're doing that step by step. So it can take 4x the amount of time. And then there's a funny one that happened to me personally. We went on a site visit and the agent was opening an account. And there's also the part of the next of kin. Right? Who is your next of kin? What's the next of kin's number? And this woman couldn't remember some of the information about her next of kin. So she was like, let's call my son. I now had to sit on the phone and try and explain to the son what we were doing and why this was necessary and why this was important. Right? Because don't forget that there are also a lot of scammers in the ecosystem.
Yes.
So that took another 20 minutes trying to assure the son that we were not also trying to play, you know, play a fast one on the mom.
Yes.
So those are some of the activities that we engage in opening an account. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, again, how fit for purpose are the banking tools that we have.
Yes.
So when I say form, for example, does a form assume it has to be written in and completed for people who are only literate in English language?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because bottom line is that if I don't speak, and literacy means different things, but in Nigeria, our business language is English, and we forget that a lot of Nigerians are not proficient in English.
That's correct. Yes, you're right.
So how are we also making these tools fit for purpose and appropriate to them? So while the agents can be intermediators in this whole process, they mm-hmm. also need capacity and competency building. They need mm-hmm. to understand the implications. Because you see, Chinasa, if you opened an account with an agent, you wouldn't want your information being in the public domain either.
I wouldn't.
Right?
Yeah.
So it goes back to in the good old days when banks used to use that 132 column printer paper, and then you go and buy bolli or roasted corn, and that's what they wrap you for, bolli and roasted.
I know.
Yes, so identity, privacy, and those are things that, again, they're related, so but we can't also think in silos. So our institutions also need to sort of come together and say, what are the dependencies? What factors do we need to ease? What are the mm-hmm. leverage points that we can use to activate this thing and really have a global systems view of what needs to be done?
Fantastic. Well, Prof, again, like I said, you've schooled us. You've given us so much information and such a deep perspective into what the issues are now. I'm even thinking there's so much to unpack and unravel and fix. And I don't know that we have the time before January to do that. So I think that what I want you to do is, what would you say is the one key thing that needs to happen before January, right? When the old currency is no longer in circulation in view of the challenges that marginalized communities will be faced with. What needs to happen? One thing.
I think the one thing that can happen mm-hmm. to immediately impact how this is implemented is to change the approach and not have a one-size-fits-all approach.
Makes sense.
Yes. So in some marginalized communities, it might mean in some sort of safe kind of way doing a cash swap.
Okay.
Rather than an account swap.
Fantastic.
In that sense. So, you know, and we might also, you see, the thing about this is about being customer centered mm-hmm. and, you know, having empathy.
Yes.
And if we look at it and say we want all Nigerians to be able to do this in a manner that's convenient to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say cash swaps, you can limit it to 5,000 naira, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to say, oh, I'm going to swap 1,000 naira. So you can say per household, we can do a maximum of 5,000.
And for the communities we're looking at, they probably wouldn't have more than that anyway. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think it's also about thinking around how we can meet the needs of the people mm-hmm. as well as ensure that the policy goals are also achieved.
That's
and I don't think the two are at loggerheads,
mm-hmm.
but it's just about thinking around different strategies rather than this magic bullet approach
mm-hmm.
that we feel that, oh, there's a one-size-fits-all. How do we begin to scale things? And I'll give you an example. In the UK, when bank branches started closing and internet banking was coming up
mm-hmm.
and things like that, there was the elderly community had to speak up and say, no, how about us? Because they were now being marginalized,
mm-hmm.
even though they were living in an urban area, right? Area.
Yes.
Yes. So it's really about ensuring that we listen to the voices
of
every community.
Absolutely.
Another thing we need to do is, like I said, it's about formalizing the informal.
Mm-hmm.
How are we engaging with associations, market associations,
mm-hmm.
groups?
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, don't forget that now, even the behaviors have to change because you can't go to the market today with 50,000 anymore.
Yes.
Because that means you have to be withdrawing, you know, 120,000 every day.
Correct.
Before you can go to the market with 50,000.
Yep.
So behaviors have to change.
Yes.
How do we digitize acceptances in the market?
Mm-hmm.
How do we think about offline payments? Because the system, the technology doesn't always work.
True. You're right.
Yes. Yeah, so I think that the opportunities honestly are there.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't think that this is a single solution problem. There are multiple solutions to this problem. So it's going back to the drawing board and innovating and looking at things on the locality kind of perspective and regionalizing this local, you know, local government by local government. But really, if we're empathetic and customer centric, then we should be able to get it done.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said that any better. And thank you so much, Prof. I think that you've done a great job of setting the context for this series around the Naira redesign, because then there's so many things you've touched on that then gives room for further conversation and questions to other stakeholders and players within the ecosystem. So thank you so much for your time. It's very insightful. And in fact, like, I've learned a lot about financial inclusion myself. So on that note, I'll just like to remind us about our work at Inclusion for All, where we continue to deepen our knowledge about the barriers that keep marginalized populations excluded and advocating for their removal. So conversations like this one basically gives us the opportunity to talk about the potential that the vulnerable populations have when people like us talk about their problems, to put them out in the open, and we can collectively, you know, think about solutions and how to help them and make sure they're not left behind. So thank you for listening, and look out for the next episode in this series. To learn more about the Inclusion for All Advocacy Initiative and to access more insightful data about financial inclusion for the marginalized groups in Nigeria, please visit our website, inclusion-for-all.org.